all tastes, no judgments. If there was one thing Leo valued, it was honesty, and Cardotti's House of Leisure might have been the most dishonest place in the world, a place where everything was pretending to be something else. It was decorated like the palace of some dissolute emperor, all fake marble columns and false velvet, lulling music and forced laughter, clinking glass and whispered secrets. There were bronzes of naked people, paintings of naked people, colossal urns decorated with naked people. If it was possible to make nakedness boring, the decorators of Cardotti's had managed it. Women glided about the hallway with high shoes and hungry smiles, with hair piled and twisted, with clinging clothes of shimmering pearl white and glistening oil black. Clothes that gave tricking glimpses of thigh and shoulder through slits and slashes showed the laces and buckles of elaborate underwear.
"By the dead," muttered Glarwood.
"Very much so,"
croaked Antaup, staring around with eyes wide in his mask. Everybody wore one, a Siponese tradition, like fog, deceit, and the cockrot. Masks of crushed crystal and lace, leering devils, and porcelain dolls. Glarwood's was a whale, appropriately enough, and Durin's a bird, Jin's a gatehouse, and Antaup's a unicorn complete with crystal prong. Leo had, of course, a lion. What else? It had felt foolish when he put it on, but now, among so many others, it started to feel dangerous. No one knowing who anyone was. No one having to take responsibility for what they did. No one bound by the usual rules, or by any rules at all. The thought made him excited and worried both at once. His palms itched from it. A woman swayed towards them across the mosaic floor, snake-hipped, feathers fluttering at her shoulders, holding long arms out in a showman's flourish.
"Welcome to Cardotti's House of Leisure, my lords," she crooned in a voice overripe with Styrian song.
"Who says we're lords?" asked Glarwood, grinning.
"We treat every visitor as if they are."
She brushed him under the chin with a gloved fingertip, then looked at Leo.
"You are the young lion?"
"Some people call me that. It is our honour to entertain so famous a hero."
He would have enjoyed the compliment more if he'd felt she was telling the truth, if he'd felt she was capable of it.
"Well, thank you."
"King Jappo is most keen to speak with you, but otherwise engaged just now. The entertainments of Cardotti stand entirely at your disposal in the meantime."
"I like the sound of that," said Jin, giving Leo a punch on the arm that sent his weight onto his bad side and caused him a twinge of pain.
It had been a mistake to walk here. Antaup's map had led them wrong 3 times, and the damn leg was hurting worse than ever.
"Here at Cardotti's, we cater for all tastes and make no judgments."
The greeter led them past a half-open door, 3 figures lurking by lamplight beyond. They were dressed, or perhaps undressed, in much the same way as the women, but they were decidedly not women. Stubbled jaws, chiselled bodies. By the dead, did he glimpse a muscular pair of buttocks in the shadows?
"We stand ready to indulge every whim."
"Perhaps we'll just gamble to begin with," snapped Leo, disgusted, and strangely hot around the ears.
She led them into a panelled room, noisy with the flutter of cards, the click of dice, the whir of the lucky wheel, surely the unluckiest invention of all history for its players. A band with masks like leering faces stroked and tickled and kissed out music, which managed to sound somehow dirty. Masked guards lurked. Masked men pushed gambling chips wearily through pools of light stained by coloured viscerine glass. Masked women hung upon them, giggled at tiresome comments, swayed with the music, and caressed old grotesques as if they never saw such beautiful gallants. The place looked like bribery, smelled like lust, and sounded like blackmail. The greeter spirited a box of chips into Leo's hand.
"Enjoy yourselves, my lords."
"This place is vile," he muttered as she glided off.
He reached up to wipe his sweaty forehead, realized he couldn't because of the mask.
You need to live a little.
Glaward swept two drinks from the tray of a waitress with a mask like a golden octopus and started to swill one back while holding out the other.
I'd best stay sober. I've a deal to strike with one of the most powerful men in the world.
I haven't.
Antalp plucked the drink from Glaward's hand, took a mouthful, then bared his teeth.
Bit sweet. Like everything here.
Leo gasped at a touch on his shoulder and spun about. No assassin at his back, but a willowy blonde in a mask like a butterfly.
No need to startle, my lord, she pouted at him.
I'm not startled,
though he obviously had been. She giggled, as if anxious bad temper was her favourite quality in a man.
I just wondered if I could be of any...
No, he snapped, turning away. Yes, said Jin, nipping in front of Antaup with surprising agility and slipping his arm through hers.
Aren't you a strong one?
Leo heard her cooing as they headed for the door.
Glad someone's enjoying themselves, he grumbled under his breath.
It was absurd for a red-blooded young hero to wish his wife was with him in a place like this, but he wished Savine was there. He was coming to rely on her more and more, to admire her taste and her judgment and, well, everything, really. But she trusted him to do this. He couldn't let her down.
Don't worry,
Durand, slipping up close to speak softly, knowing Leo's feelings without a word said, like always. He guided Leo over to the dice table. It was the right height to lean on, at least, and take the weight off his throbbing leg without showing any weakness.
You're the young lion. You convinced Ricker and Stour to join you. United two bitter enemies under your banner. Just be honest and strong and generous. Just be you.
Durand leaned closer, grinning.
Only a bit more ruthless. This is Styria, after all.
You're right.
Leo took a hard breath. Good old Durand always knew what to say. He had united Ricker and Stour. He was the great persuader, and if he could add Jappo to his alliance, the game would be won before it began. A solid, silent, grey-haired man with a mask like a pair of dice was running the table. His eyes flicked to Leo, as blank as double ones. Care to throw?
Why not?
Leo tossed a few chips onto the bays and flung the dice. 2 5s, droned the dealer. Player wins. And he shuffled some chips towards Leo. As easily as that, he was the winner. Leo wanted to grab Durand and kiss him on the forehead, but given that odd moment earlier, he threw a rough arm around him instead and put him in a manly headlock.
What the hell would I do without you?
He shoved a larger stack of chips out onto the table and snapped his fingers at Antalp.
Pass me those dice.
The greeter at Cardotti's House of Leisure was a work of art in herself, a moving sculpture of black silk, paint and feathers, the very personification of Sipani's succulent corruption, or corrupt succulence, whichever, really.
Your Majesty,
she said, dropping into a deep and graceful curtsy, almost as deep and graceful as the one Savine used to perform, though her skirts had never split all the way to her hips in quite so mesmerising a way.
"Probably best you don't call me that,"
murmured Orso, tapping the side of his nose.
"Incognito, you know."
"Everyone is incognito here."
Her accent reminded him rather of his mother's, which most certainly shouldn't have been an arousing thought, but somehow rather was.
At Cardotti's, we are notorious for our discretion.
She leaned close. Even masked, she managed to look magnificently sly.
Among many other things.
Indeed, I believe you once hosted my father?
The greeter looked somewhat pained.
The night of the great fire. A sad moment in a proud history.
Gorst, for some reason, gave a kind of strangled cough. The greeter took Orso by the elbow, resting against him as lightly as a fur sits on a lady's shoulder, purring in his ear.
But the building has been completely rebuilt since, and our security is second to none.
She gestured to 6 armed guards, standing still as suits of armor against the walls.
You could not be safer locked in a vault, I assure you.
And we'd have a lot less fun there, eh, Gorst?
Gorst followed in brooding silence, glaring about with fists clenched.
King Jappo is most keen to speak with you, but otherwise engaged just at the moment. The entertainments of Cardotti's stand entirely at your disposal in the meantime.
What entertainments have you got exactly? Asked Tunny, adjusting the fit of a mask shaped like a silver star.
All of them.
The greeter led them into a dark-panelled hall where games of skill, chance, and ruination were being played. Groups of men sat talking, laughing, smoking, drinking. Girls cooed and crooned and fluttered fans between them. Coloured light gleamed on fine glassware and soft skin, filtered through amber drinks and curling smoke. Rarely, if ever, had such a tableau of high-class debauchery been assembled in one place, and also had arranged quite a few himself in his misspent youth, and his misspent adulthood, for that matter.
"Despite all my protestations to the contrary," he said, sucking in a breath heavy with husk, musk, and perfume, "I think at least half my heart belongs to Styria."
"Reckon I've died and gone to heaven," said Tunny, grinning hugely, as the Gurkish might say.
"To hell!"
squeaked Gorst, heavy jaw firmly clenched beneath his mask of a crescent moon. Also had attended quite a few masked balls and learned how to handle them through pleasurable trial and error. The main rule was not to get carried away and make an utter ass of yourself. A good rule under all circumstances, in truth, but one that not everyone followed. 4 men were gathered at the dice table, 1 in a unicorn mask slouched against it, shirt open to show a patch of sweaty chest, waving 1 floppy hand in time to the band, or in fact entirely out of time.
"Lovely music," he droned. "Wonderful music."
"I told you not to smoke that pipe," snapped a broad-shouldered one in a lion mask as he flung the dice down the table.
They were from the Union, clearly. Angland accents, maybe? 4 friends, but the lion appeared to be the leader, not unlike Orso's own party, except that Gorst never drank, while Tunny always drank but never seemed to get drunk. The whale-masked one, who was indeed whale-sized, laughed uproariously at something the bird-masked one said, then lifted his glass but managed to spill most of its contents before he got it to his mouth.
"You're drunk," growled the lion.
"It's a house of leisure," said the whale, spreading his hands in good-natured apology. "Shouldn't we all be drunk?"
"We should all be as drunk as possible, whenever possible."
Tunny whisked a glass from a passing tray.
"In from the Union, my lords."
"From Angland," said the bird.
"You?"
"From Adua," said Orso.
"Business?"
"Of a sort,"
grunted the lion, as the dealer handed him the dice with a slightly pained look, as though it hurt to let go of them.
"You?"
"Business. And my sister lives in the city."
Orso lowered his voice.
"Took the opportunity to palm my mother off on her. I love the old bird, but she won't stop going on at me to marry."
"You should."
The lion tossed the dice and brought up 4 and 6, to false delight from the girls about the table.
"Married myself not long ago. Had my doubts, but it's been the best decision of my life."
The bird winced and turned away.
"Haven't looked back."
"She's licked you into shape."
The unicorn blew a little bubble of snot as he laughed.
"I suppose it all depends on finding the right woman."
Orso gave a long sigh.
"Thought I had her, but she slipped through my fingers somehow."
"You should work on your grip."
The lion tossed the dice 1 more time. "Pair of 6s, droned the dealer, and swept an armload of chips over, while the girls cooed as though throwing 1 number rather than another was quite the achievement. Now the greeter whispered something in the lion's ear, and he stepped away from the table, straightening his jacket.
"Best of luck with your business, and with your mother."
He frowned over at his friends.
"I'm sure you 3 will keep busy while I'm gone."
The whale grinned over at the bird.
I dare say we can think of something.
Lovely, muttered Tunny out of the corner of his mouth as he watched the man stride away with the slightest limp.
Real charmer,
also scooped up the dice and tossed them bouncing across the table.
1 and 3,
said the old dealer.
Player loses,
in much the same emotionless tone as he might have announced a win. Also sighed as he watched the chips gathered up. Why is it always the bastards who get all the luck?
Winning teaches you nothing, said Tunny. You see what a man really is when he loses.
Jappo Monrogont Macato, Grand Duke of Ospria and Viserine, Protector of Puranti, Nicanti, Boletta and Afoya, not to mention King of Styria, sprawled on a velvet chaise in front of a mural of winged women floating naked from a sunset sky, and looked very pleased about it. His Suljuk silk gown trailed open to show his muscular stomach, complete with a streak of thick black hair. A young man dressed in the style of a Gurkish slave boy had been leaning close to light the king's pipe. Now he swaggered over to Leo, sinewy body dusted with glitter.
Can I get you anything? Anything at all?
No, snapped Leo. King Jappo's preferences were well known, but he'd never dreamed they'd be so proudly displayed. Leo had always preferred the company of men, but not in this way, not at all in this way. He certainly wouldn't have boasted about it if he'd been a pervert, which he wasn't, of course. He just found it hard to get excited unless his wife slapped him.
Thank you for seeing me,
he managed to grate out.
I was here anyway.
Jappo sprawled back and puffed brown smoke rings.
You're the one who's crossed the sea.
Not the best start.
It was my wife's idea, like most of my good ones.
Yes, keep it light. Charm the bastard, like Durand had said.
Alas, I have not met your wife, but by all accounts she's a very shrewd woman.
Jappo shook his fist.
Very tough.
He stroked his shining gown.
Very beautiful. I love to surround myself with beautiful things. But women?
He held up a wobbling hand and made a sound like, "Nyeh."
Mixed feelings. Hope you're enjoying Cardotti's.
Well,
no doubt you prefer the battlefield.
Jappo swung his bare feet down and sat eagerly forward, hacking at the air with his still-smoking pipe.
You want to mount a horse rather than a lover, grip an axe instead of a bottle, and have the screams of the dying for music. Am I right, young lion? Eh? Eh?
Well,
Jagger,
I like to keep a clear head.
I like mine stuffed with delicious dreams.
And Jappo stuck the pipe back between his teeth and puffed away.
Come sit.
And he patted the chaise beside him. Leo pointedly took a chair opposite. By the dead, he wished he hadn't turned down those drinks now. He couldn't have been less comfortable. But a man shows his quality when circumstances are against him, his father always used to say. Where was the glory in easy victories?
So tell me, young lion, why did your wife send you here?
She didn't send me.
Had she, though?
I mean,
your wife told her friends, who told my friends, who told me, that you're building a grand alliance, that if I were to hop aboard, we could drag relations between Styria and the Union out of the bog, that after so many unprofitable wars, we could forge a peace that would be the envy of the world.
Jappo grinned over.
Anything to it?
Well,
Leo struggled to force his mind back onto the script.
The only real dispute we have is King Orso's claim on Tarlins. His false claim, that is.
I think it's quite a solid claim.
What?
His grandfather was Grand Duke of Tarlins. Then my mother murdered him and his sons and stole the city. My lawyers would no doubt differ, but if you're asking me, Orso has a much better claim to the city than I do. But then, I have it, and I'm not handing it over, and every time the Union tries to take it from me, my mother gives you quite the spanking. So when it comes to claims...
And he twisted his face and made that "nyeh" sound again.
Well, yes, I'm saying we wouldn't try again. We'd give up the claim. I'm not interested in Tarlins, only the Union.
Indeed.
Chapo's expression was hard to gauge because of the mask.
The Union interests you so much you want to steal it.
Leo worked his mouth.
I want to free it.
I once heard a pickpocket use that defence about some purses he'd liberated. They still cut his hands off.
Our quarrels, not with King Orso, but with his closed council. Their arrogance, their corruption, their dragging the nation into the sewer.
And who is involved in this noble scheme to free the Union from its king's chosen councillors?
Leo paused a moment, mouth half open.
Come, come, young lion. You can't expect me to join a club without knowing the quality of the other members.
Probably Leo should have kept his cards close, but the man's constant look of slight scorn was beginning to grate on him.
Myself and all the lords of England, Lord Isher, Lord Huygen, Lord Barazin, and 15 other chairs of the Open Council, though I'm sure more will join us. They're all chafing under the closed council's yoke.
A little olive oil can help.
What?
With chafing.
Leo soldiered on.
Then we have friends among the commoners, and the sworn oath of the King of the Northmen himself, Stour Nightfall.
A far-reaching brotherhood. Can King Orso really know nothing about it?
There was no point holding back now. It was all or nothing, and boldness had always been Leo's way.
He doesn't suspect a thing.
Leo was trying so hard not to look at Jappo's bare stomach, he ended up constantly glancing at it.
A member of his closed council is in our pocket, warning us of every move he makes.
And expecting a reward, I'm sure. No doubt every one of your allies has something to gain.
If he could have seen Jappo's eyebrows, Leo expected they would have been raised expectantly.
I can offer you Sipani.
Dismal negotiating. He was tossing away cities without even a hint of barter. Savine would have been disgusted.
That's generous.
I'm a soldier, not a salesman.
I meant I was unaware it was yours to give. Here I am, after all, in Sipani, enjoying the best the city has to offer without your permission, doing what I want, smoking what I want, fucking who I want.
Your bed, your business,
snapped Leo, but the Styrian proverb came out strangled.
If it helps, I don't only fuck men.
As far as could be told through his mask, King Jappo looked faintly amused.
Sometimes I'm fucked by them. Look at it this way. If you needed advice on horses, you wouldn't go to someone who never rode a horse.
What?
How could someone who never had a cock really know what's best to do with a cock? I've debated scholars the world over, and no one's been able to give me a satisfactory answer on that point.
Some might say there's a natural order to things,
Leo forced through gritted teeth.
If we were constrained by the natural order, we would still be wriggling naked in the filth.
Some of us still are,
said Leo before he could stop himself. Jappo only gave a little snort of laughter.
So, Sipani is your final offer?
Leo paused. They'd all agreed to offer Westport if they had to. A superstitious slum, Savine had said, a paltry price to pay for Angland, Starrickland and Middleland. He'd reluctantly agreed at the time, but now his leg was aching, and perhaps it was the chagger smoke, but he was feeling out of sorts, hot in the face and slightly dizzy. He hated Styria, hated Sipani, hated Cardotti's, hated this degenerate excuse for a king most of all. He raised his chin, trying to look haughtily down his nose, but his eyes kept being drawn to that trail of dark hair from Jappo's navel into the not entirely concealing shadows of his gown.
My last offer, he snapped angrily.
Jappo gave a wounded pout.
Your shrewd, tough, beautiful wife gave you nothing else to bargain with?
You're dealing with me,
growled Leo, further nettled. He wasn't giving up Union territory to one of the Union's enemies, especially not this one. Savine might be upset, but he was the husband, the leader, the lord and master. He was the young lion. He'd beaten Stour Nightfall. He'd beaten Black Calder. He could beat the likes of Bloody Orso without the help of some grinning Styrian pervert.
Shame, murmured Jappo,
though whether he was talking about the offer or who was making it was hard to tell.
You've given me a lot to think about.
He lay back, one arm behind his head, forcing Leo to scrupulously keep his eyes away as that bloody gown fell even further open.
Less than I was hoping, but even so, I'll let you know my answer in due course.
Sooner rather than later, said Leo stiffly. We move on the last day of summer.
Stay a while, young lion. Enjoy the hospitality. You seem tense, and do pass my regards to your wife.
Leo ground his teeth as he pulled the door shut. He would have liked to fling the bastard thing closed and snarl some ugly curses after it, but the greeter was in the hallway, guiding someone else towards Jappo's door. It was that smug idiot from downstairs with a gilded sun for a mask.
Mind out!
He snarled, barging past.
By all means, said Orso, as the man in the lion mask shoved between him and the greeter and stomped away.
Rather rude.
It was, said the greeter. But being an arsehole is crime and punishment both.
It is.
And she eased the door open and offered him the way.
King Orso.
Jappo Makato reclined on a velvet daybed in a mask sculpted like spread eagle's wings and a Girkish robe that left nothing to the imagination.
It is a great pleasure to make your acquaintance.
The pleasure is mine, said Orso in Styrian, giving the kind of sweeping bow his mother had always told him was popular in Tarlins. How often, after all, do two kings get to chat? It's rather refreshing being able to speak to someone on an equal footing.
And he took his mask off and tossed it on a side table, then dropped down in a chair and poured himself a glass of wine. Jappo frowned at the mask.
That's really not the done thing in Cardotti's.
We're kings. The done thing is whatever we do. I came here for a frank discussion. By all means, leave yours on if you prefer.
You speak excellent, Styrian.
I have my mother to thank. She won't bully me in any other tongue.
We both owe our mothers a debt, then. Mine gave me a whole kingdom.
And Jappo plucked his mask off and dropped it beside Orso's. His face was not at all what Orso had imagined. Handsome, but in a strong-boned, broad-jawed sort of way. Surprisingly pale, too, in spite of his dark curls. He looked more like a Northman than a Styrian.
Chagger?
He asked, holding up a pipe.
Why ever not?
While the King of Styria charged the pipe, the King of the Union frowned up at the towering mural behind him.
A copy of Arapella's Fates?
Well recognized.
Jappo turned to look it over.
Worse brushwork than the great man's version, but far more bare flesh, so I consider it a draw. The original's in my mother's palace at Fontesarmo.
I am aware. My mother would say it's her palace, though.
Really?
And that Arapella's Fates is one of the few treasures your mother didn't destroy when she stole the place. Mostly because, as it's on the ceiling, it was out of easy reach of the criminal scum she'd employed to help her.
And do you share your mother's opinion?
Very rarely, said Orso. She tends towards the vengeful. I sometimes think she named me purely with the intention of annoying your mother. My namesake, Grand Duke Orso, did kill your uncle, after all, and very nearly killed your mother, before your mother killed him, and my uncles, and half the nobility of Styria. Is that how it went?
Roughly.
So many familial murders, I trip up on the details. We do have a rather complicated family situation.
Most kings do, I suppose.
Honestly, I'd rather put it all behind me. What's the point in having new generations if all we do is pick up the feuds of the old one?
I'm very glad to hear you say that.
Jappo discerningly pursed his lips as he plucked the hood off a lamp and held it to his pipe, puffing up a smog of brown smoke.
Enemies are like furniture, aren't they? Better chosen for oneself than inherited.
And made to be sat on.
My mother would agree with you there. She is a soldier.
Jappo tossed his head with a kind of fierce pride when he said it. Perhaps the first truly honest-seeming thing he'd done since Orso arrived. He handed the pipe over.
A most formidable one.
Perhaps the most formidable alive, said Orso, puffing some smoke of his own. Only an idiot would deny it.
But great soldiers become prisoners of their own success. All she thinks of is her next victory, beating her enemies, winning the war. She pays no mind to making friends. She has no time to win the peace.
And is that what you want, to win the peace? Jappo shrugged.
Here in Styria, we had the years of blood and the years of fire. There in the Union, you had two wars with the Gurkish and two wars against the North. Then, to cap it off, we fought three wars against each other. Half a century of destruction. No one is asking me, but if they were, I would say that we could probably take a breath, build something, make the world better.
He seemed to remember himself and sat back.
And, you know, fuck, make music.
Also blew a couple of ragged smoke rings. This dissolute hedonist business suits you, but I've played the role myself.
Really?
My own preference tilts towards women.
As does your mother's, I understand.
As does my mother's. She has sublime taste in that, as in so much else. But otherwise, all this is rather like looking in the mirror. I think I even had that same gown. He pointed at it with the stem of the pipe, though sadly not that stomach. So I am well aware, fun though it is, this performance is just another kind of mask. Jappo raised his brows.
You'd like me to take that one off too, would you?
I wouldn't ask you to strip too far for your comfort, but I think we have the best chance of a mutually beneficial discussion without it. A little smile curled the corner of Jappo's mouth, and he jerked his gown closed, swung his long legs from the chaise, and sat forward.
Then let's talk honestly.
Have you seen my friends? Asked Leo. One had a bird mask and one a whale. The woman gave him a towering sneer, then a disgusted hiss, and turned back to the cracked mirror, touching up the paint on her mouth with furious concentration. He limped on down the corridor, one hand on the flaking wall. He wasn't even sure how he'd ended up back stairs. Took a wrong turn somewhere when he left Angland to ask for Styrian support, in his opinion. There was nothing you could trust in the whole damn country. Behind the veneer, Cardotti's House of Leisure was a very different place, a warren of low-ceilinged little cells, mouldy, cheap, and seething with frantic action. It reminded Leo of the preparations for a battle, the chaos and barely contained panic, the pulling on of gear and tightening of straps, the expressions of grim determination. He glimpsed two women through a doorway, one with teeth gritted and chin raised, mask dangling from her hand.
"He fucking bit me, the bastard!" she snarled in common. "He fucking bit me! Is it bleeding?"
"A little," said the other as she dabbed at red marks on her neck with a cloth.
"You shouldn't be back here,"
she snarled at Leo, kicking the door closed. His meeting with Jappo had gone badly, he knew. Worse, the more he thought about it. He wondered whether he might have made a serious mistake by not offering more. Then he felt disgusted with himself for offering as much as he had, annoyed with Savine for making him try, irritated at the world and everything in it. He'd made a grubby compromise too far by even talking to that greasy bastard and hadn't gained a thing. What use could a man like that be in a battle anyway, if you could even call him a man?
Once Leo had dealt with the closed council, he'd have to lead an army to Styria so Union arms could finally wipe the smirk from King Jappo's face. The thought gave him some fleeting satisfaction, but it was soon driven off by the pain in his thigh. He leaned against the wall to grip it, knead it, breathing hard through clenched teeth. He wished he'd brought his cane now, but he refused to look like a cripple. A band was tuning up somewhere, a flurry of screeching notes. He saw a woman up on her elbows on a bench, skirts around her hips, while an old man in cracked eye lenses peered between her legs.
"You've caught the rot," he explained to her in Northern. "You'll need to use a powder twice a day. Don't eat it."
"Why the hell would I eat it?" she snapped.
Leo recoiled from a blast of steam. Half a dozen dark-skinned cooks were wedged into a tiny kitchen, running with sweat as they carved meat and turned spits, one of them singing some jagged prayer as he pushed a dozen grease-caked pans around a brazier, another arranging a few morsels onto a perfectly white plate, the one clean thing in the whole place. Leo turned to find his way blocked by a dark-haired little girl with food stains around her mouth.
"Did you hurt your leg?"
she asked in very clear common.
"I did. Or, well, the King of the Northmen hurt it. Hasn't healed. Don't know if it ever will."
She looked up at him with that awfully solemn look children sometimes have.
"Do you know where my mother is?"
"I'm afraid... I expect she's probably working."
Leo cleared his throat, not knowing what the hell to do with her, and deciding nothing was his best bet. Somewhere, a female voice screeched furiously in Styrian, an endless flow of sing-song curses.
"Do you know where the gaming hall is?"
The girl raised her skinny arm to point at a narrow door further down the hallway.
"Up the stairs."
When Leo finally found the place, Antaup was lolling against the dice table, looking even more drunk than before.
"You're back!"
he called, tried to let go of the table, and nearly fell. Leo caught him by the elbow.
"Where the hell is everyone?"
"Think Glowood and Durin went back to the rooms. Maybe said we should stay, enjoy ourselves. Jin, is he with that woman still? Shall we get a drink?"
"I think you've had enough," said Leo, giving Antaup a shake. "Jin can find his own way back."
He couldn't stand to spend another moment in this place. He needed to talk to someone clear-headed, someone clever, who could work out how big a mistake he'd made. He needed Durand. "Let's go." King Jappo filled Orso's glass, then tapped a loose drop from the edge of the decanter.
"So what has brought you all the way across the Circle Sea?"
"Treason," said Orso simply. "I may be facing a rather serious rebellion, and these rebels may be seeking your help. I want to convince you not to give it."
"You are, Frank."
"I expect your position, like mine, gives you limited time to relax. I would not presume to take up more of it than necessary."
"How thoughtful."
"Good manners are a gift that costs nothing."
"If only the young lion saw things that way."
Orso paused. Plainly, that had been no slip of the tongue. "You have met with Lord Brock, then?" It was a heavy blow, but hardly a surprising one. Orso wondered whether Savine knew of it, whether she had helped plan it. Even now, the thought gave him a stab of pain so sharp he could barely hide it.
"Perhaps I have been approached about joining a, let us call it, a confederation. Conspiracy strikes an ugly note, doesn't it?"
"Awfully tasteless," said Orso, sucking thoughtfully on the pipe and letting the smoke curl away.
"A confederation based on freedom, patriotism, and high principles."
"Awfully tasteful."
"Aimed at, let us say, altering the priorities and personnel of the Union government."
"Just a little tweak to policy?"
"Exactly."
"Because treason sounds most underhand," said Orso, handing back the pipe. Jappo grinned as he took it.
"Few things more so."
"Might I ask whether you are minded to join this well-intentioned group?"
"I am considering my options."
Jappo stuck out his bottom lip, twiddling absently with the pipe.
I should say that I was offered Supani.
That hung between them for a moment.
You know my sister Carlotte is married to Chancellor Sartorius.
Does that mean, asked Jappo, that you couldn't match the offer?
Orso gave a long sigh.
If I was willing to stab my own sister in the back, how could you possibly trust me? How could anyone? I could lie and say yes, then later renege, but I think we've all had enough of that sort of behaviour. I would rather be honest and say the best you'll get from me is that things stay comfortably familiar. I will give up my claims on Tarlins. I've only ever seen the place in paintings. Take it with my blessing. Perhaps in time we can even join hands across the Circle Sea and win the peace together.
He looked up at Jappo and let his smile fade.
But if you try to take Supani, I will fight you. I may well lose, but I will fight you with everything I have.
There was a lengthy silence. Then Jappo raised one long forefinger and wagged it at him.
I thought I'd love the young lion and find you detestable.
You would hardly be alone with that opinion. Jappo slapped his thigh.
That's what I mean. You're excellent value, and he's a fucking idiot. Warriors, I swear.
I know. They're so ridiculous, and yet they have no sense of humour.
Fuck him.
And Jappo handed back the pipe.
Supani isn't worth another meeting with that arrogant arsehole. And from what I've heard, Stour Nightfall wouldn't know the difference between Arapella's fates and a smacked arse. I very much doubt he and I would get on.
He was one of these patriots, then.
Along, I believe, with at least a dozen members of your open council and at least one of your closed.
I don't suppose you'd fancy sharing some names?
Well, I wouldn't want to spoil the game. You've played so well so far.
Orso sat back, smiling. It was bad. It was as bad as he had feared. But there was a strange relief in knowing exactly how bad.
You know, King Jappo, I think we should make this a regular thing. I'm amenable, King Orso, once you've beaten your rebels, if you beat them.
So I can rely on you to stay out of this?
My mother would want me to promise you yes.
Jappo grinned very wide.
Then stab you in the back at the first opportunity.
I think we have probably both had enough of what our mothers want.
Probably.
So I can rely on you to stay out of this?
I suppose you'll find out when you don't feel the dagger between your shoulder blades.
Jappo grinned even wider.
Or when you do.
Orso sucked at the pipe one more time and let the smoke float from his pursed lips.
How thoroughly Styrian of you.
Durant,
called Leo as he pushed open the doors, but the room was empty. Sounds of the city outside, music and laughter. Gilt mouldings gleamed in the darkness, drape stirred about the open window. That made him frown. Surely they'd shut it. Could someone have broken in? Be waiting for them? It only came to him then how dangerous this business might be, how many enemies he'd made. They should never have split up. He put a hand on the hilt of his sword.
Glowit,
he hissed, wincing as he stepped into the room. After the walk back, his leg was burning all the way from his foot to his hip. He could hardly bend the knee. Antaup started giggling, which didn't help. He'd been giggling all the way from bloody Cardotti's.
Pour me a drink, eh? Shh!
Leo caught him by the elbow and half steered, half threw him into a chair. He sat there, shaking with suppressed laughter, which within a few breaths turned to gentle snoring.
By the dead, muttered Leo.
Then he saw a chink of light at the keyhole of one of the connecting doors. Durin's and Glarwood's masks dangled on the knob beside it, whale and bird. A flood of relief. He let go of his sword, went to the door, and shoved it wide.
There you are!
He thought at first that they were wrestling, and nearly laughed at the mismatch. They were kneeling on the Gurkish carpet, Glarwood gripping two fistfuls of the covers, which he'd half dragged from the bed, eyes squeezed shut and his mouth open.
Durand was pressed against his back with his teeth bared, one hand down between Glawood's legs, the other tangled in his hair and twisting his head around so he could bite at his ear. Then Leo realized Durand had his trousers down around his ankles, and Glawood had his off completely, flung rumpled into a corner, their hairy thighs pressed together, and suddenly it was entirely clear what they were doing, and it wasn't wrestling.
"But," he breathed, clapping a hand over his face, but somehow still looking through the gap between his fingers.
"Fuck!"
He reeled away, nearly tripped over Antaup's outstretched boot, and stumbled from the room, out into the corridor, leg burning, face burning. He was sickened, shamed, disgusted. Wasn't he? "Leo!" Durand's voice echoed at him from behind, and Leo flinched, kept lurching on, didn't look back. By the dead, he wished he'd never come to Styria.